95.3 The Score is looking to hook you up with a sweet deal.
Bring it on, Chop. Let's go.
Go to 95.3thescore.com and click on the Sweet Deals link to see the entire selection of sweet deals that we have to offer.
Man, y'all got a coconut up.
And now,
check this out.
It's Crunch Time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score.
Well, hello. And I welcome you. All right. And most of you. Crunch Time and Sports Talk Thursday edition. We've got a fun show for you. Well, I hope it's fun. We've had fun putting it together. In about 8 minutes, gentleman by the name of Jeremy Evans, who does the Believe in Sports Law podcast, and he is a lawyer down in Southern California, who's really wired in and has written an excellent article about the Houston Astros and some of the legal action brought against them. He also sent out a couple of tweets I thought were interesting about the new Seattle NHL franchise and what they're offering. And hey, you know, I love our regular guests, and you know, we talk a lot of football and basketball and regular sports. It's always nice to try a little something different, don't you think? Lightning round to wrap up Crunch Time today. Aaron Fentress is in Indy at the Combine, which many of you are obsessing over. And, hey, knock yourself out. You're not hurting anybody. That's just past 4 o'clock. In the 5 o'clock hour, maybe 5:15 or so, Erin Boley of this magnificent Oregon women's team. Check in. I've spoken with Erin a couple times, but in the interview room, she has never been a guest on the show. One of my favorite players. Love me a sniper. And she is just a terrific player, obviously a Notre Dame transfer. Every time you hear her speak, you're like, oh, talent and brains. This isn't fair. This will be a mismatch. But she'll join us in the 5 o'clock hour. This looks like, you know, I didn't realize how collective bargaining went as far as, nice. Is it a matter of, I'll be perfectly honest, I thought the owners voted on something, presented it to the union, and then they had a vote. Now, because we get so involved with halls of fame, and you're like, yeah, well, 3 out of 4 have to do it, and 67% have to do it. This is a 10-year deal that's been presented, and you've got some high-profile players, Russell Wilson, A-Rodge, J.J. Watt, who've been like, no, we don't like it. And then Damar Smith, the executive director, their ringleader, says he thinks it'll get approved, understands why some players will get upset. There are players who are just like, no on 17 games. And I guess he said the effort in negotiation helped the core players, which are about 60%, who the thing is, and justifiably so, the guy you don't know much about playing for the Carolina Panthers or the Raiders is, he gets in about 20% of the snaps on defense as a backup safety or outside linebacker and is really good on special teams and makes $672,000. For those guys, this looks really good. They will increase minimum base salaries by $100,000. And for players who make more than $4.25 million, the thing is, the extra game, how much are they going to get for that? For players who make X amount of dollars, they get a regular game check. For the players that make minimum, they'll get a cap off number. And like I said, there's a point, and I'm sure a lot of you are with me, where, yeah, you're an NFL fan, you're interested in this, you want to be informed, but then it's like, I like to think that your tank for things that really interest you is about 10 gallons, and then it starts to hit E. With stuff like this, it's maybe like a half gallon. Like, I'm reading, all right, I don't care anymore. You're going to sign it or not. Well, oh, Justin Herbert about 40, to run the 40.
40. Go, Justin. Run faster. Faster, Justin.
By the way, 4.71 for a 6'6 quarterback.
Wow.
That's impressive.
He took four steps. He's that big.
Yeah, by the way, one thing, and when you see Herbert, and because one of the things about football is there's an element of anonymity, if that makes sense. I mean, I don't know how many of you got to see Justin hoop at Sheldon or play baseball, but, I mean, you see him, and you're like, that is a big physical freaking specimen, and then you see him run, and, you know, he runs like a jock, like an athlete. Like, how's this? He runs like a runner, not a quarterback. You know, I'd be curious to know, like, what Montana ran, Peyton, Brady.
Peyton ran the same 40 time as Patrick Mahomes.
Really?
Yes.
I can't even be. Somebody just, I want to see the stopwatch and know who's getting paid off to lie.
Sundials. They were using sundials back
then.
Oil
paintings?
Yeah, well, Levitard Show brought that up a couple weeks back, right after the AFC Championship game, because it was hilarious thinking about Patrick Mahomes, that run he had for a touchdown, where he showed off athleticism, he was rolling out the wrong way, he was using head fakes and eye fakes and pump fakes and everything, and then he sprinted into the end zone and carried five guys with him the last 5 yards, 3 yards, whatever it was. I can't imagine Peyton Manning at any point in his life doing anything that athletic looking.
By the way, Jalen Hurts. Every Jalen Hurts. 4.64.
Tannenism.
By the way, do you have to be the biggest maniac of a general manager? All right, we like Herbert. We think he's going to be there when we pick at 6. But if he runs over a 4.7, he's out. We're just giving up on him. 4.71, he's done. We'll wait till next year. That Shuck kid is coming out. Anyway, we'll lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Remember, Duck Basketball tonight, right? Ha! We'll hit you with our pregame, later start than usual, 7 o'clock. Joey Mack and the folks at Oregon Sports Network at 7:30. And then we'll have the call of the game. If you're looking for it, it is on it's ESPN2 has the TV, but we'll have the call as the voice of the Ducks. But like I said, we're hunkering down. It's going to be a long night of sports talk and college basketball, so let's lock it down. I'm stoked for our next guest, quite the resume, one of the founders of California Sports Lawyer, entertainment, media, sports, the website, cslegal.com. He brings you the Believe in Sports Law on the Believe Podcast Network. On Twitter, his handle, at Jeremy M. Evans Esquire, ESQ. Boy, that's a lot to do for an introduction. Jeremy Evans, appreciate the time. How's life treating you these days?
Good, thank you, Steve. Honored to be with you.
So, as I mentioned, now you're a Southern California guy, and that 619 area code, probably familiar to many West Coasters, but as a first-time guest, just a little background, where do you hail from? Where did you do your undergrad and law school?
Oh, no, thank you. So, grew up in Los Angeles and spent some time in the Valley, which is like Northridge, and then eventually moved out to Palmdale, and then went to UCLA for undergrad, went to law school in San Diego, and then ended up getting two master's degrees, a master's of law and a MBA from Pepperdine in entertainment, media, sports, law, and management.
Okay. That's impressive, A. B, as a sports junkie, what years were you at UCLA so I could kind of connect the dots of who was there football and basketball-wise?
Oh, wonderful, yeah. So I was actually a transfer student, so I was there from 2003 to 2005. I think the biggest player was probably Drew Olsen, quarterback for the football team at the time.
Right. And we're going back, would you say 2003? So that would have been the tail end of Steve Lavin into Ben Howland, if my math is correct.
That's right. Exactly.
All right. I should get a sports show, you know?
So
I'd be remiss, obviously, if I didn't ask about the podcast. Where can folks get it? How would you describe the content or what folks could expect when they tune in to catch it?
Oh, thank you so much for asking. So it's pretty easy. You could literally just Google, you know, Believe in Sports Law. Or it's actually on the podcast icon on my website that you mentioned earlier. Really easy to find. iTunes, Spotify, the whole thing. And I would say the content is not just specific to sports. It's really entertainment and media. So I'll talk about how streaming sort of is going to be sort of coming into play more with sports as technology is advancing and streamers are getting more involved. And I'll talk about anything from the Astros sort of the cheating scandal to Hollywood movies.
Yeah, it's really a diverse array of topics. Great stuff. Talking with Jeremy Evans of the Believe in Sports Law podcast. I saw you tweet out something yesterday. I mean, obviously, we're here in the Pacific Northwest. There's a new NHL franchise coming to Seattle, and I was unaware of this. So the team is going to offer fans free public transit to get the games, to get two games. You think it's a great idea just beyond, you know, any financial savings. What do you think is so appealing there?
No, really good question. I actually thought it was fascinating when they did that, and interesting. You talk about entertainment, media, sports. Jerry Bruckheimer, who's obviously a famous Hollywood producer,
right,
is one of the main owners. And you know, and I think probably his experience with the transportation issues in Los Angeles, and of course it's getting better, so I think comes from that. And obviously folks in Seattle are probably a little bit more used to using public transportation than folks in L.A. So I think it's really good on two ends. I think, one, it's great because you have a situation where it's kind of like the Google and the Apple phenomenon, where they have laundry facilities and services, and they have daycare and all these things on campus. And instead of referring to work, they refer it to coming to campus. And so it's this idea that you do these really cool things that make it easier for your consumer or your workers to get to work or to, you know, enjoy entertainment. But the reality of it is it also just keeps people there longer, and it puts more money in your pocket, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but from a business standpoint. So I think that's obviously good, and then obviously the environmental impact is great in the sense that you have folks sort of not having to drive or whatever it is to get to the game.
By the way, for anybody who heard the name and it was familiar, I mean, Jerry Bruckheimer, only all the CSIs, Top Gun, Beverly Hills Cop. Yeah, he's kind of a heavy hitter.
Right.
Let's get to the Houston Astros and the press conference. I thought was, I don't know, I'm going to use the terms arrogant and naive to think they'd get up there, not really cop or be remorseful, and think, well, everybody's just going to move on. But knowing fans, how ready do you think these players have to be for the rest of this season to just hear about it like few others when they're on the road?
You know, a really good question. And I got to say, I really respect Rob Manfred. I think he's a good guy. I think he's got a good reputation. I think he just unfortunately handled this situation really badly in the sense that his one mistake that I thought he did, it wasn't necessarily in the discipline, because I think that he set out a policy, and he had to follow that through due process and to say, here's the, you know, I can only fine you $5 million. I can only take away draft picks. There was no player discipline allowed under that policy. And so, of course, he just followed the sort of policy that he issued, which I give him credit for. What he did wrong, and I think what's affected the players, is that he didn't rip the Band-Aid off. When he issued his letter basically saying, this is what's happened, he should have also released the report showing everything that happened. So that way there wasn't this sort of drip, you know, dripping fountain of information where you get players fighting with each other in terms of the war of words. And, you know, and of course, I just saw Bregman got hit almost in the head yesterday with a pitch. And, you know, so these things are just, they shouldn't be happening. You know, in some sense, I think baseball does a good job of policing itself, but this could have just been something where the players could have come out and, you know, sort of been, you know, come clean. But I think they were also, I would not be surprised if they were under a non-disclosure agreement based on their immunity. And that's why their press conference was handled the way that it was.
You know,
they probably weren't allowed to do it.
Right. I thought something you mentioned earlier in your podcast struck a chord with me. Safe to say, and I think this I might be paraphrasing, you said this could be a course in public relations titled What Not to Do.
Right, absolutely. It's so true. It's like you would never do that, like in the sense of let's get in front of the public and let's not give all the information and not expect, you know, repercussions from that, from the players to the fans to, I almost feel like if it was this was handled better, you wouldn't be having all these lawsuits being filed.
Talking with Jeremy Evans, the Believe in Sports Law podcast. Along those lines, Mike Bolsinger, the former major league pitcher, he's taken legal action, and certainly it registered a lot of sarcastic comments. But as you wrote, the filings in California, you got into some legalese. So for we lay people, in essence, what are the two requirements you wrote about that are necessary to prove a claim in this case?
Sure. No, really good question. So in California, there's this interesting law, and it actually may be prevalent in other states too, that basically this interference with prospective advantage. And you have to have two things. The one is you have to have a relationship with a third party. So in this case, it would be Mike Bolsinger and the Toronto Blue Jays, who played the Astros in the division series of 2017 playoffs and or postseason. And then the second, which he obviously has that, he can prove that. The second aspect, which is the harder one to show, is that, you know, but for the Astros cheating, he would have had another contract. And I think that is just it's an uphill battle for, I think, two reasons. One, precedent. Courts have been very, very, very clear, especially in sports, that things are so prospective that you don't know what's going to happen the next day. So even like, for example, we saw that video clip recently where it showed Clayton Kershaw, who threw 51 sliders and curveballs during Game 5 of the 2017 World Series against the Astros.
Right.
He did not get one swing and miss.
Jeez.
Now, that alone is a profound fact, and it clearly shows that the cheating had an effect. But I think the problem is, and this is exactly why Kershaw is not filing a lawsuit or asking for, you know, the World Series back, is because you don't know what would have happened even if they did swing, right? Or it's just this whole sort of thing of the what if, and I think that's kind of where Bolsinger's case, as sad as it is, kind of falls on its face, because you'd have to get the Blue Jays front office in there, and you'd have to get them to admit that, oh, we were going to sign him, but for him giving up, you know, X runs during the, you know, the series. But I think there's also some facts going to that he did not have the greatest of seasons that year either.
Couple final thoughts for Jeremy Evans. Would I be accurate in kind of drawing a line between what you said about not being able to factually say what it meant, kind of like when people want to put an asterisk by Alex Rodriguez, maybe, it's not like he would have hit no home runs if he didn't use PEDs. So it's almost impossible to put an accurate financial amount on the cheating because it didn't impact every game or every dollar. Does that make sense?
100%, and you said it better than I did. I think the fact is that is the disappointing thing about cheating. It's not necessarily that somebody does it or the effect on it. It's that it puts a cloud over the thing that you care and love about. Because then you sit there and you go, well, what might have happened? And you start guessing, second-guessing everything. That is the unfortunate side of cheating. And when you put that cloud over it, it's like, well, what could have happened? Could we have won? Maybe. And I think that's sort of the disappointing part. And I think in one of the original articles that I wrote about it, I said this thing about that the truth is that history is the judge and jury when it comes to cheating. So when people think about the Black Sox, they think cheating.
Right.
You know, when people think about the Roger Clemens and the Barry Bonds and the Mark McGwire, they think about cheating. But the fact is that Jose Canseco still would have hit home runs despite, you know, taking PEDs. You have to have the skill to even enter the room. The problem is that you're taking it above and beyond by sort of confusing the populace by cheating.
And one last thing, I mean, we talked earlier about the litigation, and once that can of worms is open, in reading your piece on sportsradioamerica.com, I actually learned about a few more. So there's an L.A. law firm who are looking for Dodger fans for a class action suit. Jeremy, what is that all about, and is that a tad bordering on the unreasonable?
100%. That is even more unreasonable than the Bolsinger case. And now with this, I don't see any of these cases seeing the light of day. What I do potentially see is some settlements out of court that would obviously be signed under non-disclosure agreements, and nobody would ever know about it. And so I think ultimately that one is even more far-fetched, because the fact is things are already expensive when you go to a baseball game. And the other thing is that with both the Astros and the Dodgers, you had 100-win teams. These guys, so it wasn't like, you know, people would have paid less to attend the World Series if it was the Yankees playing them. Arguably, it would have been more expensive. So I think it falls on its face in the sense that, you know, having to prove that ticket prices were inflated or hot dog prices were inflated because they were playing the Astros in the World Series.
Folks, he's Jeremy Evans. That's some fascinating stuff. Part of the Believe in Sports Law podcast on the Believe Podcast Network, online, believe.com. His Twitter handle at Jeremy M. Evans, ESQ. Hey, Jeremy, great having you. I thought that was such interesting information. I really appreciate your time and absolutely hope we could do this again down the road.
My pleasure. Honored to be with you.
All right. Have a good one. Really interesting. I delved into some of the articles, and obviously some of the specifics legalese-wise about the requirements within the state of California a little bit over my head, but obviously a super smart guy, UCLA grad, law school grad, 2 master's degrees, so and very eloquently put, I might add. Yeah, really. Get something done! All right, that brings us to break time. By the way, Justin Herbert, 2 shots at the 40, 3.71 and 4.71 and 4.69, excuse me.
Nice.
And by the way, that would have blown out of the water what I said yesterday. The all time is what, 4.26 or something like that?
4.22, so you'd have beat it by almost half a second.
The 6'6 quarterback.
Yeah, he would have taken 3 steps.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll be back with more Crunch Time, 95.3 The Score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
Down to Wiggins. 8 seconds. Cowan. Thought about the 3, saw a 2 out there. Here's Wiggins. 4 seconds to go. Marcel, deep 3. It's good! 1.9 seconds to go. And Maryland leads 74-73.
Well, all right. That's Kevin Kugler of the Big Ten Network as Daryl Morcel hits a 3 with 2 seconds left, rescuing another top 10 team from losing to an unranked team. Seems like night after night after night after night, they win at Minnesota, Maryland is coached by a former Oregon assistant, Mark Turgeon the Sturgeon, as we welcome you back to Crunch Time, 95-3. The Score, your home for Duck basketball, which is tonight. And, it's a big one.
Tannenism.
It's a big one? Is Tannenism?
It's the way you say it's a big one. You always go, oh, it's a big one.
It's Kramer.
It's a big one.
You give me, you know, I wish I could get the royalties instead of your credit for this stuff. It would be a hell of a lot more lucrative. Well, it actually would be lucrative.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't be here saying Tannenisms if you're getting royalties from saying other people's
From Seinfeld?
Lines. Yeah.
Yikes-o, McBikes-o. All right. I don't know. That I just pulled right out of my baba. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. Hit some thoughts on the text line, 321-0824. Regular show today, and then we shall return after an hour because somebody at the athletic department didn't use their proper influence and get Oregon the 6 o'clock time slot. Instead, they got 8 o'clock, which means I have to find something to do between 6 and 7. I guess I could prepare for tomorrow's show, which, by the way, tomorrow, with the women back in town and Bev Smith back in America after providing analysis for the Canadian national team on national TV in her home nation. So we'll be out at Trev's place doing the show tomorrow, then leading up to the last two home games of the regular season, the last two regular season home games for Hebert, Ionescu, and Sabully. And in the 5 o'clock hour, probably 10:15 after, we'll talk with somebody who's going to be a senior next year. Number 21, Aaron Boley will join us. At the top of the 4 o'clock hour, we'll have Aaron Fentress of The Athletic, who's live on the scene at the Combine in Indy, joining some of you crazy people. How many hours has this been on now?
Started at 1 o'clock, I believe, yeah.
2.5 hours. I can honestly say, especially since the monitor's like right in front of me.
Yeah, it's very close.
It's more of the Combine I've watched today than ever combined. Well, a combine.
Oh, no. Well, it's normally a morning thing. Like, they get everybody in there.
They're moving it into primetime. Football's an addiction.
Yes, it is. Very much so. I mean, the case in point being that they moved the Combine, which is a bunch of dudes in tights running in straight lines and then standing around. They moved that into primetime so that more people could watch it, because having it on really early in the morning, to the benefit of, I'm guessing, all like 19,000 people that are in Indianapolis for this event, would have been a hell of a lot better for them to be done at 1 o'clock as opposed to starting at 1 o'clock. Or 4, whatever the time is.
I understand. Indy is central time, so I'd imagine a 2-hour difference. Or is Indianapolis on our time? You know, Mr. Han, I've been thinking about it. Since I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time?
3 hours ahead.
So it's East Coast time.
Yes.
All right. Indy.
The EST.
All right. I believe you, sort of. All right.
Well, I read it from the internet, so if you don't
the
like...
The internet has never lied. Aaron Fuller, wide receiver for them thar doggies, hitting a 4.64. You know, the weird thing about a 40-yard dash is, unless you're a special teams guy, I mean, how often, how many plays does anybody outside of a wide receiver actually just run in a straight line for 40 yards?
Special teams guys?
I just said, aside from special teams players.
The occasional running back when they break free. But even then, they have to kind of dodge some guys in front of them that are trying to murder them.
Ahead of the field, you know, when a running back will pretty much do that, either if they get completely wide open on a wheel route, or if it's 4th and 1 and everybody's at the line of scrimmage and they break free and they're gone for like the last 50 yards.
Exactly.
Otherwise, I get that it's a measure of speed, but you're going to take that over what you saw of a guy play 48 games over 3 years, catch the ball, make clutch plays, be a go-to guy. It's like, I get it. And with the NFL, of course, they like to throw their muscle around. And we've said this before. It could be Game 7 of the NBA Finals, World Series, NHL Finals. And if the NBA decided, we're going to show you who really rules the world, they could drop a scroll on ESPN and said, tune to the NFL Network to see what kind of spikes Tom Brady is going to wear next year, and everybody would flip over. It's so them being them. By the way, John Hightower of Boise State, 4.44. That's some good wheels. And By the way, because of you, I'm completely captivated by this thing and completely out of my mind.
It's interesting.
Happy.
I am. I'm glad you're embracing spring
football,
Steve.
I don't have a choice. Unless I do the show with my eyes closed.
Well, I mean, the remote's right around the corner if you really wanted to change the channel to not watch it.
There's
but they're doing
really
the wide receivers.
Four. There's no actual games on until 4
o'clock. Juwan Johnson's coming up in a second here. They're into the Jays of the wide receivers. Justin Herbert already went as a
quarterback.
Justin
Jefferson.
Yeah, and then you get the quarterbacks throwing to wide receivers, which is always interesting to see the strength of the quarterback's arm, how far he can throw the ball.
We didn't know that.
How fast that. Well, no, you don't know until you get them in an NFL stadium because these college stadiums, they're not NFL stadiums. Stadiums, Steve. They're just not. You can only know when you put the Duke in their hands, that's when you know.
You know,
start slinging the pill.
Honestly, I don't want to tip our hand because we do it after the draft is done when we pick our three guys we think are going to be lock great pros. I've actually thought about this, and Justin Jefferson of LSU is like on my list. Wow. I mean, he's 6'3", almost 200, and all he did last year was have 111 catches and 18 touchdowns.
Is that good?
By the way, another guy near and dear, Isaiah Hodgins of the Beavs, who I think is an absolute lock, good NFL player. He's taking his turn right now. I mean, he's got the prototypical speed, and I also thought he showed really good hands. By the way, 4.61. But I don't think his value is as a stretch the field guy. I mean, he's made some unbelievable catches in traffic, going up for the ball, and you know, you're not just going to use him to, you know, stretch the field and open stuff up underneath for tight ends and running backs, and you know, you're more slot style receivers. He's a really good player. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You know what because I've never really delved into this, what are the qualifications? It's like you have to get invited to certain camps, you know, you get named a McDonald's All-American in basketball, the Under Armour All-American game for high school players. How do they make a determination as to which college players get invited to the combine? I mean, do you make your pitch in there? If you're Oregon, are you like, you know, we think 11 guys who qualify, and obviously this year I think it was with Dye, the three linemen, Breland, Herbert, and Juwan Johnson, it was 7.
All college seniors are eligible for the NFL Combine, as well as any underclassmen that declare. How they are selected, all 32 NFL teams are invited to provide input on draft-eligible players, which is used by the Player Selection Committee to select each year's participants. The participating NFL executives can rotate on a yearly basis, remain anonymous. All eligible players are reviewed and voted on by the committee members.
Aha!
Each athlete receiving the necessary number of votes by position is then extended an invitation. While this is not a perfect science, the goal of the committee is to invite every player that will be drafted in the ensuing NFL draft.
Well, at least they don't make a production out of it.
Right.
So it's, what does it end Saturday?
Sunday.
Sunday. So it's really Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Well,
Sunday.
Yeah, you got to show up. You got to get measured. You got to hang out. You got to learn what's going on in Indianapolis. I'm sure it's a really vibrant, buzzing
city. It's
like
a cattle drive.
Vibrant, buzzing city is what the NFL is going to have you say. You got to get measured. You got to schedule your meetings. You got to talk with your agent to schedule more meetings. You got to do some tampering. You got to go to the steakhouse. Then you got to work out. You got to get loose. You got to get ready. You got to work out everybody by position. You got to figure out which guys go together on the field, and then you got to move it back later in the day so that more people can watch it.
When we were at the national championship game against Auburn, I forgot who it was, but they had set up and they were doing a TV hit. It was like from a station, I think in Birmingham, and it said something about, I'll tell you what, these Tigers just get off the bus well. And I wonder, you know, talking about the Astros and cheating, has anybody ever been caught, you think, trying to stand on their tiptoes so that they measured taller?
Maybe.
The tiptoe scandal of 2014.
Well, that was the thing with Baker Mayfield, is everybody thought he was going to come in at like 5'10 and 7/8 or whatever. And then he allegedly got one of those like zero gravity like shindigs. where he like you strap in by your ankles and you hang upside down, and he used gravity to extend his spine over the course of like months of training. And this is an actual thing that he said he did to get taller. And he's like, and I think another thing he said was, I like to get measured first thing in the morning because that's when you're at your tallest. Because while you're sleeping, your spine expands, so you get a little bit taller before the weight of the day, aka gravity, can quite literally weigh you down.
So they have the vertical, the broad jump, the 40-yard dash. They do bench press. They do interviews. They get psychological testing. They have meetings. So does anybody go in there and think, man, I got to tell you, nobody attends a meeting like me. I am the best meeting guy in this draft.
You got to sit at the front. Everybody's got to sit at the front of the class, which means you got to get there early to make sure that you get that front seat. You got to have your notebook. You got to have multiple pens and pencils.
I bring highlighters, too.
Oh, man, maybe highlighters, depending on what they're giving you.
Team color highlighters.
I'd stick to one highlighter. Multiple highlighters, multiple pens. Things can get confusing. You don't want to overwork your process taking notes so that when you go to review them, you get confused.
So from
simple
what I've
process,
heard,
simple learning. Keep
one of simple. The guys from Notre Dame was like, I'm okay at the medical exam. Nobody in this draft is better at the medical pre-exam than I am. Yeah, you can get carried away with this stuff, I'll tell you. But and by the way, not that we would take anything and do a 1.5 gainer down a ridiculous rabbit hole, but lo and behold, there go Steve and Nick again. Thanks for being a part of it. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Are we going to Seattle to bring in Nick so he can get his bi-monthly torture Steve in? Hey, Nick.
Well, it's getting to be about at least once a week thing, but I'm going to keep the XFL out of this just to be nice to you, Steve.
Thanks.
You've got all weekend, so instead, we're going to talk, since we're talking tippy toes, that was actually my my entire recruiting strategy was kind of, at first, the whole, hey, let's get on those boards, let's get these measurements by going tiptoes, but they definitely check for that. They push guys down. So what I've learned is tiptoes are for amateurs, Steve.
Okay. So
what the real trick is to get that extra, like, quarter of an inch in there. And I wish I would have done this on my pro day because for some reason I was only 6'4 and 5'8". But what you do is you get at least enough either Band-Aids or you can get some foam padding. You got to go under the sock with that. They're going to catch the tippy toes. They're going to make sure you don't run the heels. But it's all about that extra layer of padding on a couple sweet spots on the foot. I guarantee you get another quarter inch out of that baby.
All right. So the lineman that feels like if he's 6'5", he'll go a few spots higher in the draft has to stop off at like Walgreens for a box of Band-Aids.
Now, here's the thing that's shocking, though. There are so many discrepancies where they'll look at you necessarily giving you that first look before they really dig into your film on a second level just based on some of those preliminary statistics. So while it seems pretty silly, they do put a lot of stock into some of those measurements. I mean, I remember very specifically getting ready for Pro Day. There were guys trying to get their wingspan as wide as possible, trying to do stretches just to be able to make sure you're getting that extra like inch and a half out of just how you're positioning your arms to your side. I mean, it was ridiculous. Didn't have anything to do with the football talent on the field, but a lot of it is just the physical wear and tear, and can your body endure that for the position you're planning on playing? I think that's one of those things a lot of casual fans don't factor in, that's why they're really looking.
All right. No, that's good insight. I appreciate it. And by the way, Nick on Twitter is at justfollow61. And even if you're not interested, he'll torture you 5 to 6 times on a Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. And can't wait for your recap on Monday of these awesome XFL games this weekend. Steve, catch you later.
Take it easy, Nick. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Does that bring us to break time? Sure. Thursday equals lightning round. Coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
you don't have the quarterback as the focal point in terms of guidance on the field, making checks, doing all those things, it's hard to develop that field general personality that we all grew up watching and hearing about. We produce guys who execute plays, not necessarily are the guys who are, hey, look in the huddle, look at my eyes. We got 85 yards to go. Let's get there.
Interesting take. Really good analyst. You see on the radio. You hear him a lot on the radio. You see all over the place. Charles Davis, who works for the NFL Network, works for Fox NFL, and he's at the Combine talking about something I'm going to ask Aaron Fentress about. When they talk about these quarterbacks not being leaders, it's like that's more a knock on the college game. Because if you're not in the huddle, you're basically there to make plays. You look over to the side for the play. Then you look over again if you want to change the play. You're there to be more of an executioner. So I just thought it was, to execute the plays. An interesting take, which we'll discuss in a bit. But as we hit the home stretch of the 3 o'clock hour on a Thursday, that could only mean one thing. How about a lightning round?
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I've prepared for such an event. The lightning round!
We've got another Thursday lightning round. By the way, the Civil War tonight in town. This NFL Combine's got my head spinning round. And Skip Bayless is still a clown. This is a lightning round.
I just realized you start most of these with, it's a Thursday lightning round.
Like there's another one?
Right, we don't do any Wednesday.
I don't know why. It's
Friday.
You know one thing, knowing me all these years, I'm a very triggered person. I'm like the human version of a Pavlovian dog. I hear that, and it's like, Thursday lightning round. All right. What's a good opening, guys? We need to figure out what a perfect opening, because I feel like having one opening line for every lightning round is a good springboard, and then I could fill in the rest.
I'm not saying it's a bad line, but it sets you up with rhyming lightning round with all of your other words. And
I know, and I do that every time. Again, Pavlovian, have we met?
We have. In just about every sport, the Pac-12 eats itself alive. It can be bad on a national scale because no team looks like they're a dominant force. But out here on the best coast, if you're team chaos, it's great. And this year's race for the regular season Pac-12 men's title is going to be a doozy. Pay attention. ASU's on top of the standings at 10-4, having played their territorial cup double. They play UCLA at USC, or at UCLA at USC, hosting UW and Wazoo. They went 3-1 against those four teams, losing to Wazoo. It was the last time they've lost. They've won 7 straight. Colorado is second, playing at Cal, Stanford, ending the season at Utah. They went 3-0 against those three teams. Oregon takes on Oregon State, Cal, and Stanford at home, where Oregon's unbeaten, but they're 1-2 against the three teams that they're going to play. And also tied at 10-5 is UCLA, play all three of their games at home, ASU, UA, USC. The Bruins went 1-2 against those teams as well. Now, if UCLA loses to ASU, they're pretty much done. But if they win, and I think they will because that's what the chaos must dictate, there's going to be a lot of chaos. It's also the only game that will give us any sort of clarity in who might win the title because none of those teams play each other, which is just perfectly Pac-12. Who wins the Pac-12? ASU, Colorado, Oregon, UCLA.
Wow. I'll tell you what, I wish I can go pending because I honestly believe if Oregon beats Oregon State, who's beat them 3 in a row, they're going to win this thing because they're going to sweep the no-cal schools. So they would need Arizona State to slip up, but they have 4 games and 2 are on the road this weekend against 2 really good teams. So I've said this before. I try to be objective every once in a while. It's like, screw it, I'm an Oregon fan. I'm picking the Ducks next.
Fair enough. We need dominoes to start falling. At least you're honest when you're not being objective. We kind of had a domino fall when the Panthers said that they want to move forward with Cam Newton, but all of the reporting that came after was about how the Panthers still want to trade Cam Newton. The biggest domino that we're waiting to fall is, or see where it will fall, is Tom Brady. It's the talk of the Combine, and it's starting to look more and more that Mr. Can't Dunk will be leaving town. Adam Schefter has reported that some insiders will be shocked if he actually re-signs, and Ian Rappaport said today that Brady's agent Don Yee has meetings set up with every team that needs a quarterback this week, except for the Patriots. According to Ian, certain factors like lack of a long-term CBA, a closed tampering window, are some things that are holding them back from starting the conversation, but that doesn't exactly answer a question as to why you couldn't have worked out a deal up to this point. It's kind of a big deal when the team you've been with for two decades isn't exactly excited about keeping you around. So the Patriots not talking to Tom Brady yet is blank.
I'm trying to think of the exact term. Cloak and dagger. I'm not buying any of it. Oh. Brady's going back to the Patriots. It is a misdirection. It's misleading. They could say everything they want. Brady's coming back next year.
It's farcical. It's erroneous.
Farcical's a good word.
Farcical's a great word. On Christmas Day, the Philadelphia 76ers were 23-10, and they were in second place in the East. They were four games behind my Milwaukee Bucks. Since then, they've gone 13-13. They went on two different four-game losing streaks. They've now sit in fifth place, half a game behind the Miami Heat. On top of the slow start to 2020, a horrible 9-21 road record. Yeesh. With a four-game California road trip coming up, the 76ers have caught a case of the injury bug. Ben Simmons has nerve impingement in his back, which is not just back pain, but it's pain that runs all the way from your back down to your foot. And last night, Joel Embiid went down with a shoulder sprain against the Cavs, and he gets an MRI today. For a team that's been spiraling down already, losing their best players and one of the best players in the world, Joel Embiid, as he says himself, it's going to hurt a lot more. Injuries to Embiid and Simmons are a big, little, or no deal.
Oh, they're a huge deal. Simmons and Embiid are the heart and soul of that team. I know Orford's important, and Tobias Harris has been terrific, scoring 19 a game. But that's inside, outside, inside, defense, passing lanes. Those are your two forces, so that's huge. All right, looking ahead to the 4 o'clock hour, we've got Aaron Fentress pending in the Eastern time zone known as Arizona. In the 5 o'clock hour, we'll talk with Oregon basketballer extraordinaire Aaron Boley, number 21. And like I said, we're all kind of tick, 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 counting down to an enormous civil war at Matthew Knight Arena. With the results of last weekend, you know, Oregon State is now not even considered a bubble team because at best they can go 8-10 in this conference, and there's no way this league gets more than six teams in, at least I don't think. But Oregon with a victory, with the way the teams ahead of them have their schedules this weekend in particular, they could get their win, get to 11-5, and just scoreboard watch ASU, Colorado, UCLA, and Arizona, and, you know, enter next week with a pair of home games with in really good shape. All right, hang tight. 4 o'clock hour. Sports Talk is next. 95.3 The Score.
Our day was ruined.